back to another episode of Questions with Crocker with me, Dr. Crocker, an emergency vet, and my husband, Shane.
Bye.
Welcome to the podcast, Shane.
Hi.
You are my guest host.
Yes.
And you've been working hard today. What have you been up to?
We've been spending money today.
We've not just been spending money today. What have we been doing? What has the money gotten us?
We got cabinets installed. We have doors hung. We have paint touch-ups being done.
Yes.
We're starting to prep for floors.
Where is all this happening?
At your vet hospital.
It's our vet hospital.
It is our third child. I pulled myself away from this one.
No, it is our third child. You were in this.
I fired myself.
This is part of being married. Unless you leave me, your third child
is... That was not part of my vows.
Alta Vista Animal Hospital.
I vividly remember my vows and none of that was in there.
Actually, side note, do you remember how hard you cried at our wedding?
No. Because I knew there was a vet hospital in the future. Becoming clear.
I was fine. I was good at our wedding until I turned to walk down the aisle and I saw you and you started crying. So then I started crying. And then I vividly remember during our vows, when I was trying to get through mine, I said, my voice cracked, but it was when I said, for richer or poorer. And then everyone laughed because they thought it cracked because I didn't want to be poor. But that was not the case.
Well, congratulations.
This is our reality.
This is our reality.
So we got married a long time ago and we've done a lot of crazy things together. This podcast is about me as an emergency veterinarian, you as an entrepreneur. We own a vet hospital together. I work emergency in downtown Dallas at a corporate hospital. We have two kids. We have animals. Our cat's hanging out with us right now. And we're here to answer your questions. And the questions are based off of things that are submitted to us, our real life experiences. We are experts in what?
Nothing. Zero. Spending money at this point.
We are experts in nothing. We basically are sharing our experience, the things we've learned along the way, hoping to give people a little bit of insight into the world of veterinary medicine, but also into owning a vet hospital. I think that... there's actually some really interesting things happening. Oh, you got to let the cat out. Mr. Bobby needs to all of a sudden leave the room. There's actually some really interesting things happening in the veterinary industry, especially overseas. So I want to get your perspective on this. So overseas, they decided the government to get involved in basically pricing in veterinary medicine. So there was concerns that whether it was consolidation or other things, that things were being charged too excessively or marked up too much for people bringing their pets to the veterinarian. And so they're getting involved in actually looking at prices. And there's a big report that came out that did say that they felt like some of the pricing was maybe excessive. And apparently, there's veterinary professionals and a lot of pet owners that are kind of behind this movement to look at it more and look at like how consolidation and other things is affecting the industry. So I think it's really interesting. It's obviously happening somewhere where things are done very differently and the government has control over a lot more. But I think about here where the government has gotten involved in pricing, you know, when it comes to like farmers and things like that, and that can become an issue. So do you ever see here in the States that being a topic of conversation? And what are your thoughts around, because you've been in a lot of different industries, around kind of corporate consolidation, pricing, and what that can look like for a market in general? I didn't even prep you for this.
I would hope that the government does not get involved to that extent.
Yes.
In any industry or any business in the U.S. I believe in capitalism, and I think over time that is typically the best way to handle both supply and demand. And in turn, that's what drives pricing. I do think you have to be careful of monopolies.
Okay.
So if there's a scenario where there is a large corporation and it's creating a monopoly, that's problematic. But we have things in place already today to help mitigate against, you know, monopolies taking place.
Well, and they've actually done that before. So there's been some of the larger corporate groups instructed to get rid of so many hospitals, especially if they're coming together and merging. And so some of that has happened where they've had to get rid of so much or else they would have owned too many hospitals. I honestly see a lot of it as an opportunity for small business owners to kind of set themselves apart in how they market and how they price and how they talk about the fact that they are, you know, a smaller private practice, because I think people more and more are maybe looking for that versus a corporate entity. But I just, the idea of a group of people sitting down and just looking at veterinary prices and saying, oh, you're charging too much, and really not thinking about all the things that go into it is a little terrifying, honestly.
Yeah. Again, for any industry, anywhere, that's a problem if the government gets that highly involved.
So
again, keep monopolies from taking place. Make sure there's no price fixing that's taking place. Outside of that, let nature run its course.
Well, we will see what happens. And I continue to think that if you have a smaller private practice, if you really do market things the right way and you get involved and engaged in your community, you can still be really successful. But it's definitely an uphill battle with all these giants kind of around us. So we will keep you updated on that. But I thought that was really interesting. The other thing is, I might look a little tired if you're watching us on YouTube. You can watch us on YouTube because I worked in the ER last night. And I actually had a really interesting case slash, I don't know, thing that happened. So when you walk into our emergency room, it's open concept. And so people come in and, you know, we can see pretty much where they go and they can see us. And we go to them pretty quickly to triage and see what's going on. And so I had a husband and wife walk in, and the wife was very upset. And they had a cat in a carrier. And so the cat was placed on the table. We were told there was a triage, and it said, we have a whiteboard screen, and the screen said the cat ate a string. So that can be something that's really scary when cats eat string. If it's long enough, it can actually get stuck and then kind of cause the intestines to like telescope on itself and cause a linear foreign body, which can be really serious. And so definitely worth bringing your cat in if they eat something like that. But when I looked at the cat looked pretty good. And they said that the cat had only eaten a couple inches of string not too long for him. And so I kind of started going into my spiel of, you know, what we needed to do for it. I wanted to try to make it throw up because it just happened. And the owner was just very emotional and very upset. And I was kind of surprised like how upset they were when, you know, basically I was kind of saying, you know, your cat looks good and this is what we can do and we have options. And I felt like I was trying to be really reassuring. And finally, she looked at me and she was like, I remember you. And it kind of set me back for a second because we see a ton of patients and I've worked there for 3 years, so it can be hard sometimes. And I remember a lot of the patients, but not always the owners. And when I really looked at her, because I'd been so focused on the cat, she looked familiar, but it didn't come back to me right away. And she said, we were here with our dog, and her husband kind of jumped in and said, you were the one. You put our dog to sleep. And she's like, I'm so sorry. Just the memories are just flooding back, like being here. I'm so worried about our cat. We just lost our dog. And then it's you. And so immediately I said, you know, I have other doctors here. I want you guys to be comfortable. I can get another doctor to help you. But you just tell me, like, what do you need to be comfortable right now? Like, I'm going to help your cat, but just tell me what you need. And she was like, no, like, we're fine. I'm emotional and I can't help it. And I basically was like, that's fine. So we went to put them in a room just so they could have some privacy. And as we were walking towards the rooms, they said, like, please just don't put us in that room. And that was the room that we did the euthanasia in. And it's one of those things that I think is really important to remember, like how much people's experience like shapes what they remember and what they feel. And just her being there and remembering the experience. And so we put him in a different room and I gave her some time and I came back in and it had hit me like who she was, and their dog was an incredible dog, and it was a very sad thing that happened, and a peaceful, you know, ending, but just sad. And so I went back in and said, you know, I remember him now. And I got like a little emotional too, and I just said, you know, you guys are due for some good luck, so we're gonna take care of your cat and we're gonna work it out. And so they were like, we're really glad it's you. Like, we trust you. You did a great job last time, or, you know, we're just, it's a lot. And I said, 100%. So this was one of those cases where I was like, we are going to fix this cat. Like,
I've heard of other people have that same issue with their GP practice, where they may have been at a practice for a long time, but that's the practice that ended up having to put the pet down. So they end up moving practices.
Yeah.
The practice didn't do anything wrong. The veterinarian didn't do anything wrong. It's just the memory of.
Yeah. So. The memory of can be really hard. And we've had people like request our records and say, you guys are great. We just can't come back here because you remember it. So I gave the cat something to make it throw up, and it can be really hard to get that happening. And I was standing outside the door, like watching, and it was funny kind of because the guy owner was still in there, and the wife had gone up front. She just like needed a minute, and the cat started like kind of acting like it might throw up. And so I'm like watching, and it threw up, and the guy like looked, and he's like, we got it. And like all of us outside the door were like, yeah, like so pumped
up. It was just a small piece of shrimp.
It was like this big. But it could have caused a problem. And for her, it was like it could have been the end of her cat. And so I like ran up to the front of the hospital, and I was like, we got it. And she just like jumped up and came and hugged me, and she's just sobbing. And she's like, thank you. Thank you. And it's crazy how like such a small thing made such a big difference to them. And I just was like, you guys needed a win. Like we all needed a win. And so things like that, making a cat throw up a piece of string can be such a powerful experience for somebody. And I was glad I was able to like listen to their concerns. We were able to find a place they were comfortable. But it was definitely one of those things that you have to remember, like how hard and how those things stay with people, even though I might do 5, you know, euthanasias in a shift. And I try to remember each one, but it does all kind of run together a little bit when you do that many. So just a little reminder of what we do and how important it is, and also like a big win, because that was, I was like, this is happening. We're fixing this cat without anything major going on. So very thankful in that circumstance. So we, in this podcast, go over questions that people submit. And I had a really great question that I thought you and I could talk about. It is something that if there's younger people listening, it might be something that's a little bit of a sensitive subject or something that might bring questions up. So just letting people know that if they have kids that
like
are also
age?
Listening. I would say
it's like PG-13.
Yeah, PG-13 probably. I think that would be a good age. This topic is PG-13. So the first part is not. And this is Brittany Atkin. She is great. She's a follower on social media. She said she listens to our podcast weekly driving and that she loves it. So she's in Canada. So thank you so much, Brittany.
There's our one international follower.
So Brittany wanted to know, how do you deal with going back to a clinic you previously worked at before getting into vet school and getting them to see you as an actual vet and vet student instead of an assistant? And then her second question, which I thought was the really interesting one, is how do you deal with sexism in the workforce? And she gave me some pretty significant examples of what she had experienced at this practice that she was looking to maybe go back to. She said it's a small rural practice, and before she got into vet school, some of the owners were pretty sexist, and it made a very uncomfortable work environment for her. So first off, I want to talk about how do you go back to a place that you previously were at a different position and be at a higher level and essentially a leader, and what does that look like? What are some of the things that you see, like pros and cons with going back to where you maybe trained at when you were younger?
I think it's definitely hard because a lot of people that you're now in charge of help train you, right? So that always causes or has the potential to cause some controversy. I kind of did that right out of college. I went back to work for a bank that I worked at during the summers while I was in college. Mm-hmm. So it's very tricky environment you have to kind of navigate through. Some of it is on the leadership team to make sure that they've empowered you and that other people around you know that you've been empowered to make decisions based off of what you learned or the knowledge you've obtained in school, et cetera. So if you have leadership that is willing to back you and empower you and make sure others understand, it can be a much easier transition. If you don't have that, I would probably consider not going back there, to be honest with you.
100%. I mean, the red flag of just before it was a pretty sexist environment was kind of a
yeah.
But I do agree that you kind of set the standard as an owner or leader in a practice when you're bringing really anybody new in on the level of respect that they deserve. And it goes for any position. And everyone should have a voice. But ultimately, with the veterinarian, it's on me. It's on my license if something happens. And so I have to be the final decision maker with cases or with patients. I do think you obviously continuously learn from people that are in any hospital. And I think a big pro to going back to a practice you used to be at is you know the people, you know how things flow, you know the, you know, computer system, you know where everything is kept. And so that comfort level right off the bat is going to be higher just with the environment in general. But I do think that, and it's been shown in the data, that it's really hard for people to see you in a different way than when they originally met you. And I even think back to, like, we live in our, you know, hometown, and I'll have people, you know, come and see me at the vet hospital. And it's funny how quickly we kind of still kind of think of each other of how we were in high school or who we were in high school. And you have to realize, like, there's been so much time since then and people grow and change so much. So it's really hard to retrain your brain to really look at somebody in a different way and treat them differently than maybe you used to. So I do think you have to be really cautious and, like you said, have leadership really set you up for success going into a practice. And sometimes it might be having difficult conversations too of, hey, I know that, you know, things used to flow this way. Well, now I'd really like to see it happen this way, and kind of establishing the protocols and the things that are going to make you comfortable as the veterinarian.
I would agree. Also be patient, because something like this is going to take a little bit of time. Yes. Like, you can't imagine a walk-in day one and everything's going to be new. It's definitely going to take some time to establish yourself in that new role, but then also do it in a way where maybe you acknowledge that they helped train you, right?
That's a great
and understand that they have a lot of knowledge, like you said, that they can still share and pass on, and don't undermine that right out of the gate.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably, you know, for the different personalities, like, if there's somebody that you really feel like they really like verbal encouragement or whatever, I think it'd be great to say, you know, I remember you were really great at, you know, placing catheters, and I remember when you helped me with this, and being able to kind of say again, like, thank you so much for putting that knowledge to me. And now I'm happy we can work as a team together and, like, help the pet patients. And I know you're going to do a great job with this because I already know your skill level and things like that. I do think your comfort level with people like running anesthesia and doing stuff should hopefully already be there. Or you should already know the knowledge gaps because you were there before. So then you can kind of bring what you learned in your training and in school, hopefully, to even elevate things at the practice. So there's definitely pluses and minuses. And it's interesting because we have somebody that works for us that I've known her since she was, you know, really young. And she used to ride in the truck with me when I was an equine vet. And I would love it if she goes to vet school and comes back and works with us again. But I don't know, you know, if that will happen or not. And I would definitely keep in mind, like, things I can do to set her up for people to really respect her and see her as the doctor when she comes back. So hopefully that is helpful, Brittany Atkin. I think the second part of your question is even more interesting. And I think that sexism in veterinary medicine is unfortunately very prevalent, as it is probably in almost every industry, right? But I think the dynamic of having a male-dominated industry that has now become female-dominated, and also still having men a majority of leadership positions, you still see it quite a lot. So some of the examples she gave was comments being made about, like, whether she could actually handle certain size animals, comments being made about her hair color and, like, how she might react to things, or, you know, emotions, things like that. So kind of downplaying her capabilities overall because she was a female. I remember this one circumstance when I joined an all-male practice as an equine ambulatory veterinarian, and I was the only woman, and they had never hired a woman before. And I was really good. I'll say it. I was good at client communication. So I spent a lot of time in the truck. So I would, you know, if I saw a sick patient or horse the day before, I would call the next day, like, how are they doing? I'd answer all the questions I needed to. If there was, you know, something that was questionable, I would just spend time, like, really communicating with owners. And a lot of owners really liked that. Plus, I was good at what I did. So once I went out there and showed them I could do what they needed me to do, like, people were calling and requesting me. And it was really interesting to me because my boss was making comments about how people were calling and wanting me to come back out. And it was maybe people he used to see or other people used to see. And so, you know, I'm thinking in my head, like, man, he's seeing what a good job I'm doing. He's seeing how great it is. And this comment will always stick with me. He looked at me and said, it's probably how cute you look in those Wranglers. And when you jump up on the side of the truck and you lean over and get stuff out of the truck, that's probably why they want you to keep coming out. And at the time, I just kind of like laughed the comment off. But it really like was a thorn in my side for a long time that, no, I'm really good at this job. And yeah, maybe I do look cute in Wranglers, but that's not the reason people want me to come out and be their veterinarian. The other big example, which I don't know if you remember this, do you know when you used to ride in the truck with me to emergencies and we would get out of the truck together and it was a place I'd never been to before? Do you remember what would happen?
Yeah, most of the time they thought I was the vet.
Yeah. They would straight up walk up to you and say like, hey, doc, da, 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 and you'd be like,
not me.
That's the vet over there. But it was crazy how it was just so obvious that they assumed like the guy was going to be the doctor coming out. So definitely prevalent in our industry. And I think that a lot of times because it's uncomfortable to say something or to call people out on it, or you don't know how a client especially might react, you just don't say anything as a woman, especially when you're alone out with people. In regards to her boss specifically being that way and constantly undermining, what would be your thoughts, your advice on this?
If your personality is not of a certain type, I wouldn't go back and work there.
What type of personality should go back and work there?
I think somebody that would turn around and tell them that, hey, don't say shit like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
so you're not saying like take it, but you're saying
no, you got to have the personality to push back and and call them on it and probably bust their balls a little bit too at the same time.
Yeah.
Because that's probably the type of personality this person is, mm-hmm. is my guess. So if it's something that's going to bother you every single day of comments that are made, I wouldn't go back and work there. Unfortunately, you're not going to change
who they are,
that environment overnight. Over time, it's going to change because just like in your situation, they're going to realize she's really good at what she does. But that may not change the comments. That may not change the joking or, you know, right or wrong. It is what it is. So,
well, and a lot of those people are going to age out of the hospital.
Out of,
and then you're going to have people that are more aware of how inappropriate those comments are. But I definitely don't think you should just go work somewhere and take it. And like you said, constantly feel.
No. You should never do
less
that.
Less than. Yeah. So.
And quite honestly, even if you have the personality to handle it, it's probably still not a good place to go work.
That's what I would say is anyone who essentially would be disrespectful. I mean, that's what these comments are, is disrespectful. So openly, especially in front of a lot of people to your face. I can't even imagine like what they might say behind your back.
I agree.
And if they're in a leadership position, I think you set yourself up for failure working for somebody. And it doesn't matter if you come back with a doctor degree. It doesn't matter how great you are at your job. They are going to continue to undermine you because they see you as less than. And that's just the reality. So I think even if you're a strong personality, and I consider myself a strong personality, but I also think being in the horse industry, I was so used to people kind of making offhanded remarks about things that I just would laugh off. And it wasn't until I got older that I kind of learned sometimes to like look at people and be like, really? And like make it a little uncomfortable. And it still kind of makes me like sweat a little bit, my heart speed up thinking about it, because you really don't know how someone might react to you doing or saying that. And when you work with people all the time, you don't want to be the one making it awkward or uncomfortable. So I just wouldn't put myself in this situation at all most of the time. And I would say, I think as more women enter leadership in veterinary medicine and we do things, we almost have to worry a little bit about the opposite. So
I agree.
I see comments being made about male pet owners and male people that are delivery people or people that are on our team. And comments that made that if they were made towards females would be inappropriate.
Yeah.
So I think that we have to be aware of it on both sides. And make sure that we're keeping things as inclusive and comfortable for everybody as possible.
And if this is a place that you really want to go work, right? If it's everything else is great, it's where you want to be, it's close to family, it's the practice you want to be at, and there's one individual, maybe they own the place or in a leadership role, you may just have to set the groundwork up front and say, hey, look, you know, I know that there's places where they wouldn't accept me because I am a female, or they wouldn't treat me a certain way because I'm a female. I know you're not like that. I know this place isn't like that, but I just want to set the groundwork that, you know, I'm not comfortable working in an environment like that. So I just want to make sure everybody knows that I'm an equal, you know, I've got the same degree you have. I have the same knowledge you have, and set that groundwork up front so that then when you call them out later on, you can basically refer back to, hey, before I was hired, I told you I wasn't dealing with this.
Yeah. Like, so, this is not okay for me to experience this. And if it is somebody who owns it and he's there like once a week and you don't really interact with them that much and everyone else on the team is amazing, I agree. You can figure out what your boundary is. But the problem is a lot of times people that act that way so openly also have people around them. Yeah.
Birds of feather flock together.
Yes. And there are inside jokes and things that a team can have that maybe are really funny. And there are some that are just straight inappropriate. And I would consider anything about your appearance or your ability because you are a female or a male to be inappropriate and not okay in our industry. I think that.
And I want to say this very cautiously. I'm not promoting or saying what these individuals do is okay.
Mm-mm.
But you could have an environment that's an all-male team, and they've been acting the same way and joking with each other the same way for 20 years.
Right.
About a guy wearing too tight a jean. You know what I mean? And that's just become the norm. But when you throw a female into that mix, you know, those jokes have a different meaning to it, right? So be cognizant of that as well, that it may not be that they're intentionally being sexist, even though they are. It could be just how they've done with their male counterparts.
Forever.
It just comes across much different now.
And most of it is.
Does that make sense what I'm saying? Like, I'm not trying to justify
what
they're saying, but
I think you're saying that everyone has like a different level of tolerance and like intention behind what they say. But the problem
is,
it's kind
of like being in a male football locker room, if that makes sense.
Well,
like,
I've never been.
That's what I'm saying. Like, some things that are said inside of there, inside of the four walls of the locker room, are taken much differently outside of those four walls.
And I
or
think
could be taken much differently.
That could be okay as long as everyone in the locker room that has to experience those things is okay with it.
That's what I'm saying.
The question is, ultimately, do you think everyone is okay with it?
Probably not.
And my theory in life is, if I can't say something publicly in front of everyone, it's probably something I shouldn't say privately or in a separate setting. Because I think that if it's something that would make you uncomfortable saying in front of your parents or in front of your wife, then it's probably not something that you should say, period, right?
I would agree.
And that's just the way that I kind of roll. And it's probably because I've been on the side of inappropriate comments being said for a very long time. But I'm happy that we are changing things and we're talking about it, which is why I wanted to talk about this. One, to let her know that she's not alone in having these things like happen. And two, in being empowered to say like, hey, this is not okay. I deserve better. This is not the culture that I want.
And honestly, with the opportunities that are out there right now, she could probably
write her ticket
anywhere else. So don't put yourself in an environment where you're not comfortable.
100%. And there's probably other people there that are uncomfortable with the same thing. They just haven't been able to say anything. So I think that there's a lot of opportunity to try to make a situation better for yourself, but ultimately not putting yourself in a situation at all would be my best advice if you are going to work somewhere that you already know that you might be uncomfortable at. I just wouldn't set myself up for that. This industry is too hard to be in a setting where you are worried about someone making remarks that are going to make you feel like less than.
I would agree.
Especially someone in a leadership position. So hopefully, Brittany, that answers your questions. And I really appreciate you listening. If other people are listening.
One international fan.
Yeah. If other people are listening and they want to submit a question, you can do that on our social media at Questions with Crocker. You also can submit a review, hopefully a decent one, and let us know what you like about the podcast. Obviously, Shane is the star podcast.
DM me.
But I do like questions like this. I think it brings up good conversations. I've definitely been where she is, and I really hope that she finds the right place for her in veterinary medicine. We appreciate everyone listening on Apple or Spotify, and let us know if you need anything in the future. Have a great day.